Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Howdy, howdy.
Justin Robert, smug-looking young.
That's me, man.
This is the after show where we talk about being independent creatives and whatnot. We've actually got some people in Brian's studio, which would be cool. And so we're going to start off with a general question that maybe everybody could, you know, could weigh in on answer. And maybe guests have some answers and stuff, too. And I'll let you introduce them. So do you want to introduce whoever else we might be?
Well, how about you guys introduce yourselves? These are the gang from the Ritual Misery podcast, which you can see, Monday nights or Thursday nights at diamondclub.tv. Introduce yourselves.
I'm Kent.
It's great.
Thanks for the intro, Brian. Yeah, we do the Ritual Misery podcast Thursday nights on DCTV.
For those of you out there who would not know what the Ritual Misery podcast is,
it's just a couple of geeky dudes that have been friends for a really long time, and we talk about
geek stuff.
Yeah.
Can't relate. Can't relate that at all.
It's really a celebration of geekness and any kind of niche interests. We like to talk about it, explore it, and get guests on to explore it further.
Cool. And I spoke over you when you're introducing yourself, sir.
Oh, I'm Amos. The other guy from Ritual Misery.
your ritual. Got it.
Bringing that trademark energy, right?
That'd actually be an accurate statement that I'm the ritual and he's the misery.
Because I think that's pretty accurate.
I think everything he does is miserable, and I'm the OCD one. So I spent the actual show writing down diagrams of how the lights are set up and how the cameras are set up and all that kind of stuff, because I'm always trying to improve everything that we can in our podcast. So,
well, so I see you guys have the appropriate dysfunctional relationship, as we do. That's good.
Good, yeah.
So what was the first question that we had, Andrew?
So we have a question. This is from a frequent listener, viewer, says, "Hey guys, love the show. I've launched a new YouTube channel, and I'm wondering what kind of advice," they wrote mind of advice you can give me about building audience and companion podcast.
Any details on their YouTube channel?
It's just kind of sparse. It's from Andrew M.
All right. So, well, the first thing is, as we all say, is regularity is king. And I, before you even start promoting it, I think it's a good idea to have a back catalog, and especially if I'm going to assume this Andrew M. knows what he's doing, in which case he can hit the ground running. But some
people said they did 5 episodes before they launched it just to get the kinks worked out. And before they launched it, you know, they launched just to have the background. They did 5 episodes also, so when people went into YouTube to go, oh, what is this? They can go back and find older episodes and say, okay, there's more stuff here.
Yeah, that was one of the accidental smartest things that we did when launching the Modern Rogue YouTube channel, was we did test episodes for half a year before we moved everything from the Scam School channel to the Modern Rogue. And it was fun the first time one of those episodes really hit and started showing up in the YouTube recommended feed. People were like legit confused. They're all like, why does this channel only have, you know, 10,000 subscribers? This looks too good for this. So likewise, by having that back catalog, what the YouTube algorithm wants to see is people start a thing and then binge the rest of them. And then it that gives it a social cue that, that it's a legit, thing.
How much do you guys need? There's a lot of PSs here, apparently. How much do you use like the YouTube cards function and stuff and check out other episodes?
Bryce sets up all the cards and stuff. And
so we do have cards that will link to the store when we have products on the shows. We do have cards that will link to like our behind the scenes channel and other related videos, because the old annotation system does not work on mobile or TV. Well, nothing works on TV, but it doesn't work on mobile. And so, you know, that's, you know, 1 to 2/3 of your audience potentially not being able to click a link.
That's a good point.
So you want to use cards, but you only get five is the tricky thing. The other thing is this may not be as helpful for a longer show, but the other thing that we get a lot of use out of is the new end card system. So instead of making a CTA graphic and then
CTA is a call to action. That's that thing at the end where they're all like, click here to see this and all that stuff.
Basically, YouTube has like reworked that system to work like a card. So instead of making annotations and drawing it out, you take elements of like, here's a link to a video, here's a link to a recommended video where YouTube automatically fills in what it thinks is best for the next person, channels you want to promote, links and things. So look into both of those. Cards and end screens are both really, really useful tools.
Now, is this new system better than the old system?
100%.
In that it functions and the old one does not.
It has limitations.
That's why I asked, because the old system is kind of known to just be crap. Sure.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and the limitations of the end card system is you can only do it within the last 20 seconds of your video, and it can only be up to 20 seconds, and you only get so many elements in that. But that's probably good thing anyway, because you don't want to bombard people with a million different choices and a million different options. You know,
choice paralysis.
Yeah.
Andrew M. says one of the things that they did they created a one website, magicclub.tv. Which is weird because I have a website with the same name to try to figure out, because that was the hard part, was figuring out, like, where do you tell people to go? Well, go here, go there. It's like, well, let's put – we want people to go subscribe on YouTube and we want to go do that. But like before – you know, because I think we've got to get like 20 more subscribers to reach the 100-person thing to be able to get our own name that's not like a random sequence of that looks like an Apple password suggestion. Just do like magicclub.tv, because that's easier. Everybody can find it. You can put the links to all the stuff and put that there.
Yeah,
and
so is that it helpful? It looks right now like you have it forwarding to itricks.com/magicclub, right?
Yeah, I didn't do a blind forward because it's lazy.
So I would actually point it. I mean, keep this. You're going to want to keep this no matter what. But if your goal is to drive traffic to get people to click the subscribe button. So like right now, if I go to magicclub.tv and it says subscribe to the channel, what happens when I click on it? That just takes you to
– It's just a link. This is something you can do, Andrew, is – so you have a button that says subscribe, but that just takes you to the YouTube channel. You can actually make a version of that link with a little bit at the end where people click here and then a pop-up says, do you want to subscribe to this channel right when it loads the page?
I would love to find that. Yeah, because I was trying to find code. The only thing I could find was like a little tiny thing that hadn't been fully supported. But if in all your abundant free time, if you know of a resource to point this person to.
Yeah, I don't know that one specifically, but I it's used a lot in terms of getting people to go do the thing and automatically
love to do
ask
that.
Them.
Yeah. Well,
and
helpful.
I would consider, at least for the short term, maybe just having magicclub.tv just pop you straight to this channel. So because one of the – you know, part of the reason – that the YouTube is so powerful and sought after is its discoverability, its ecosystem. People feel more comfortable in it. They know exactly where to go to different things. So the if you're courting people from the YouTube environment, like I know that I personally almost never, once I'm in YouTube land, I almost never click out to their website.
Well, I mean, it wasn't so much as what to tell people in YouTube to do. It was more of like in general, because like the problem was like we don't have a channel name. Right. Until you reach the 100 and whatever like that, which will happen next couple days. So I didn't have a channel name. So it's like, where do I tell people to go? Well, we have a thing on YouTube. Go search for it, which is dumb and stupid the way that YouTube works.
Right.
And also we do an audio podcast, and it's like, okay, I need to have one thing. Here's how you find the podcast. Here's how you find this. Here's how you find that stuff. So that was the thinking. And I agree, within the YouTube ecosystem, it's like YouTube, 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 stay here. Go to Patreon, YouTube, YouTube, YouTube.
But with it being an hour-long show, I feel like having a link that can give people the RSS is, or like a landing page like this, is almost better, unless it's really you want the main focus to be on YouTube.
Well, I'm just thinking as a short-term burst, if the goal is like let's get over that 100 subscriber, you know what, let's just fix this right now. Everybody subscribe.
Go subscribe. Go to magicclub.tv and click that button. There are very few full length, you know, hour plus podcasts that I listen to just through YouTube. including like the one that the Bizarre Briefing that, that we do in the studio. We have it on, we post it on YouTube, but we send everybody to the bizarrebriefing.com because that's got the RSS and the YouTube links, you know. So it's kind of a, it's a different thing when it's a longer show like this.
Well, it's, but I mean, it's very interesting because, like, you know, Brian, your experience in this ecosystem is, and Bryce, you guys working on that because it is, that's because you do some shows that are your main source of revenue is YouTube. Some of your projects are like, well, we build up our audience and then we have the, scam stuff. Some of the stuff is Patreon supported. You know, some of it is those, you know, those private shows you use in glass coffee tables, which I can't talk about. You know, so there's a lot of the different sort of things. And, you know, I know that like with this one is like our primary audience, we look like the most likely person to sort of support us on Patreon or whatever is probably somebody who we can find on Facebook through a Facebook ad directed at magicians and stuff like that.
That's interesting. Are you going to buy Facebook ads? Because you're right. If you can reach out to magic magicians directly and basically take a topic that's on all of magicians' minds, because we all tend to think the same things at the same time and want to talk about the same things. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, I've had really good success using Facebook ads for marketing my magic stuff. It's been very, very helpful. And so for Magic Club, we know, like right now it's like, we'll just burn some money so people know about it and get to hear about it and just start increasing our views and stuff, you know, is sort of that. And we launched it, you know, last week. So it's just kind of a, you know, we're happy so far with, you know, where the growth has been going. But yeah, it's like figuring out where are the people that we need to reach.
Awesome.
Well, and that's and magic is a smaller community for which you guys have inroads and already if you have figured out if you are successful at selling magic books, then you are also highly likely to be successful with interesting people in a free product. So and then of course the free product leads to the paid thing. So I mean, yeah. Really my only thought is that, you know, the best success that I've seen in all of these mediums have meant that there is a decision on where you're going to focus your energy, because mm-hmm. creating a successful podcast is different. Like, you know, creating a podcast that would be the equivalence, the equivalent of, let's say, a Scam School or a Modern Rogue would require a lot of different kind of effort than the effort that Brian put in to make that YouTube channels tremendous successes. So I would say for this, it's like once you get the vanity URL on YouTube, the question is how much of this is a YouTube channel and how much of this is a podcast?
We see it being primarily YouTube because like when we do the secret sessions where we do the teaching portion of it, that's also video based. You know, we think it's going to live there, but I had the moment I launched it, you know, with Pete Shredda last year, I was like, well, is there an audio version? I'm like, oh yeah, there are a lot of people that just want to consume this sort of talk part in that way.
Yeah.
So, and that was why I had a plan. And then the audience told me, well, this is what we're looking for. And if I've learned one thing from Brushwood and Young, it's just tell your audience to go screw off.
So one nice thing about this format for you is that, again, the YouTube algorithm is not focused on the number of views or the number of viewers. It's focused on the amount of engaged watch time. And so both this and like Red Letter Media, Half in the Bag, you know, has these hour plus long interview shows. If you can have, you know, you'd rather have 1,000 people watch it for an hour than 10,000 people watching for a minute, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking at our, like, I love the analytics now. For those of you that have never, like, launched a YouTube channel or whatever or have not paid attention to it, like, I mean, you know, I'm Captain Caveman coming out of, you know, hibernation here looking at what's going on. And I'm like, oh, that shows me, like, watch time and minutes and views and stuff like that. And this is very, very helpful. So I'm actually looking at, like, the watch time divided by the views. I'm like, oh, we're getting pretty good retention.
Yeah, if you can, just try to the trend you want to see up is the watch time one. And that's all the algorithm cares about. Views is comforting because, like, you could see a big number and be like, I know what that feels like, and compare it to TV numbers in your mind. But it's not really helpful in terms of making
headway?
Progress, making headway.
As a listener of podcasts, can I share my one specific way that I use YouTube in relation to podcasts is listening to podcast clips. A lot of it is like fans who have clipped out bits from shows and they post it. And the YouTube algorithm is smart to know, okay, these things are all connected. So people who are listening to these things will want to listen to clips from these shows again. Mm-hmm. And especially when you have something visual like this, if there are, you know, anywhere from 1 to 10 minute chunks that are like, this is a good clip that stands on its own and could be interesting, there is definitely space for that. That's something I've wanted to do more on the Night Attack stuff, is chop out bits, because you are creating a wider web for people to find those smaller clips,
right,
and tie it to these longer, you know, full episodes.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how much of my recommended feed on YouTube is cut out clips from wrestling podcasts I don't listen to. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, because that is, it's, they're usually about 10 to 15 minutes, which for a YouTube video is long, right? And it just gets that clickbait title that's enough to make me click on it, right? It's just, here's a juicy thing about this thing or this person's take on this event that happened. And it dominates my recommended feed. Like, and that is 80% of it.
And YouTube knows when I've fallen down that hole of, yeah, like, you're listening to podcast clips, we're going to keep lining them up for you. And then you go back to YouTube, and that's exactly what it shows you next. Hey, you were listening to podcast clips. Here are some more of them.
And so, as far as your program, Andrew, I would imagine that, you know, you've got some insane talent there. So what you could do is you get to post the original episode, but then you also get to carve out, you know, like, here are three really good surprising moments that you know, you could say so-and-so's thoughts on blank, so-and-so's thoughts on the other thing, so-and-so's thoughts on name of card move or whatever. And then that way, you know, you have the ability to lure in people from the outside.
And that's really where the YouTube card system and the end title system are going to shine, because you have shorter clips that people will get all the way through.
And then
so you can say, here's where this episode is from, right?
Yeah.
You know, check out the channel, like, XYZ.
I'll tell you what, and there's got to be a magic equivalent, but like, all these wrestling clips always just work this strategy, because in the terminology of wrestling, there is shooting, right? So it's shooting is telling the truth, working is the you know, the artifice of a wrestling match, right? So they'll always just have blank name shoots on blank name, and it just implies all this context of like breaking the rules and you know, that you're gonna really you know, look, type in any wrestler and shoots on, and it'll give you a billion different other, you know, people, right? And it's just all these, you know, words that, you know, that it doesn't necessarily even have to be interesting, but people click on it because they want to know that, you know? And so I wonder what the magic equivalent of shoots on is. It's like, you know, it gives the real work. Wait, on blank.
What does shoots on mean again?
Shoots, it's like, so there's, In wrestling, there's a work and there's a shoot. And so if I'm telling you this Sunday at WrestleMania, I'm going to kick Goldberg's ass, that's a work, right? Because I'm trying to build the hype for this thing. If I'm like, hey, you know, Goldberg's a really nice guy, and, you know, when we worked together 3 years ago, he couldn't have been nicer, and I signed autographs for his kids, that's shooting. I'm telling the truth about the behind-the-scenes kind of thing, but
it's in fiction and out of fiction.
There's no guarantee.
Got it.
That's interesting, right? That could just be like what I said. I met him. He was really cool. You want to know what? He loves iced tea. Something that you might not know about him, both the drink and the rapper. He's just a huge fan. Like, but there's it gets clicks, all the views, and if you look at that recommendation engine, it's everything like that.
Blake
Bills the Bean,
explains the blank move or thoughts on blank move or whatever,
because there's something naughty to it. There's something like, oh, I'm getting behind the scenes of this,
real
like
stuff.
Yeah, I'm getting the real stuff, you know?
Something to think about anytime you have a YouTube channel. The algorithm is a game you're going to constantly play, because they're going to constantly change it.
Yep.
And once you decide YouTube is the primary outlet for whatever, you have to continue to play that game. So that's something you're going to have to keep track of too.
Well, and that's the thing is you got to realize, like, if you want to win, YouTube has made it clear. It's like, oh, all of you, you guys all work for us. We run an ad factory, and we want you to make the right eyeballs look at the right ads. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to reward those of you who do it well, and we're going to punish those of you who don't do it according to what we want. Now, that's not to say that you should or shouldn't get involved with YouTube, but when you, you know, it's a very different game, the YouTube game versus the podcast game. But there are some crossover. One thing that works in both is appear on other people's podcasts, appear on other people's YouTube channels. Like the collaboration engine, it works, man. Like that's what both YouTube and podcasts want to see and do.
Yeah, mooching off of other people's audiences has really been like how we've built our audience for Ritual Misery. We get people like Brian on or Justin on, and you guys bring your pre-built audience. Oh, we want to see this other thing that they did. And then,
Austin just to...
Right, yeah, setting Brian's studio.
Well, again, that's exactly what you should be doing. I mean, it's like the biggest jump that we saw so far on the Modern Rogue was when I did, I think, 3 or 4 collaboration videos with Grant Thompson, the King of Random. And it's not like I stole his audience. It's just that people are like, oh, I like this guy. And then you know, I'll give the Modern Rogue a try. And then, you know, then they fall into that click well.
So my question for you then is, so like, if I'm going to do like little clip segments and things like that, just put them into the regular YouTube channel?
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. You can organize them into lists. You could say
make a clips playlist.
Yeah, clips playlist.
And a full episodes playlist.
Yeah, correct. And then make all the right titles. I guess you're not. I was wondering if we already crossed over your subscription number or not.
I can't tell because I'm frozen.
Yeah. So what about you guys on Ritual Misery? Do you guys focus on the YouTube side of things? Where do you guys distribute?
Our YouTube channel is literally just another avenue for the video podcast,
right,
that we're putting out there. It's just a place we that's where I upload the most high quality version, because you know, for podcast listeners, unless you're going to have a high quality version separate, you're going to have a lower quality version for the podcast itself, which is what we do,
right?
So and we do have a few people that have told us, hey, I just watch you on YouTube only. I don't do the podcast thing. So it is effective in that way. But if you look at our channel, you can tell
it's very low numbers. We focus primarily on the iTunes distribution, the podcast RSS side of it. But since we got on DiamondClub.tv, we really focus on the live audience and the interaction. And that's what really gives us the satisfaction of doing a show.
It's more fun anyway.
Right. Yeah. And then for archival purposes, the RSS feed.
So have you guys tried any best practices to get ahead in the iTunes algorithm, or is that a focus of yours? Like, I guess that's a crowded category, geek culture. Mm. I'd imagine there's one or two other podcasts like that.
there might be.
Yeah, we've heard of a couple. No, I mean, we looked at that stuff, and when we first started – distributing through RSS, we looked at that and tried to figure out how it works, but it is very convoluted, and I don't think anyone out there really knows
what iTunes is doing.
Right, how to work that algorithm. I mean, there's some theories out there, but
it starts by going to Cupertino, like Brian and Justin do, and sucking up to the mother chip.
To be honest, you know, the big lesson there is just, you know, that those charts are run by new subscribers, and they are affected by reviews, and you are more likely to get promotion if you have good art that is spec'd correctly. Like, that was the lesson that I got from the mothership was, like, do yourself a favor and just, like, make it pretty, because we are only going to push pretty things. Like, you have to be the biggest hit podcast ever for them to push you if you have ugly art.
And that might be the problem, because we actually have our visage on the cover. So it's already, excluded from that.
Well, and also, you know, one of the – they have problems that they need to solve, including, you know, they want to feature new podcasts to discover, but they have needs. They need good art. They also need an angle, a reason that it's in there. It's like, well, why this week should we do it? So it's like, you know, we manufactured a Cord Killers Cut the Cord special just so that we would have a reason to reach out to them and say, hey, we're doing a special. We do this once a year, Cut the Cord special, and here's some nice art that goes with it. And then they threw us in the recommended feed for a week, which makes a huge, huge difference. And so I would say, Andrew, you probably want to do a similar thing for that if you could think of, like, you know, some planned special in a event coming up.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea to do that.
It's
very helpful, guys. It's very, very helpful. This Andrew M. really appreciates this because
I'm sure he does.
You're around it, and then it sort of is not obvious. And it was, you know, to the point of your guest there. You know, it's trying to figure out, like, when we launched iTrix, Justin and I launched iTrix years ago, we did podcasts. We were like, because like, literally when we launched iTrix, YouTube was a year old.
Yeah, yes, nobody knew that. And in fact, around that same time, when Scam School launched, we revision3.com thought it was a competitor to YouTube. It's like, well, we're going to grow faster than them, no way we'll put our content over there. And then at some point, it became clear that YouTube was going to become the dominant platform.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when Leo Laporte, when Twitter announced, and he was very upset about Twitter, and because he had Twit, you know, and sort of saw that as this sort of this upstart, you know, that sort of usurping his name,
yeah,
to a degree. You back me up on that, right?
No.
Yeah, he tried very actively to kill Twitter by promoting every Twitter competitor up to and including Jaiku and Plurk.
That is hilarious. So that's very helpful. So, I mean, it's my mindset is like our target demographic is sort of magicians and magic hobbyists. And theoretically, it's people who are going to want to do the secret session, which you get by accessing the Patreon, which if you support it at $2 per creation level, we set it up at saying, let's do it instead of monthly by doing it by creation, because our thinking was, the fear of not delivering enough episodes every month, if we do it by creation, then we're like, okay, well, we're going to clearly, you know, be incentivized to do that. Do you have thoughts on that when it comes to Patreon, by month or by creation?
Oh, definitely by creation in my book.
Unless you have a film that you're doing every single day, like Tom Merritt does.
Well, and that's kind of even different. Then, if I could, I mean, if you could support at the 10-cent level, then I still would tell him to do per creation.
Well, I think if you are doing regular content, if you're doing irregular content, like you're a musician and you're writing music and you're performing live and you're just giving people either concert footage or bootlegs or something like that, then I could see the argument for monthly. But in anything that is in our sphere, to me, it makes like the guiding sense of why you want to do it monthly is like, oh, well, you know, I don't know. People might think it's onerous that every single time that you're putting that out there, and then all of a sudden you start doing the like, oh, I pay this for Netflix and this for my this is what I pay for cable. And why will this be more than that or less than that? It's like, just do it. Just let people pay what they want per creation.
There is an argument if you're doing daily content that every time you send something, you know, it clutters up their inbox because they would get an email every single day.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't see how that's an issue because they like your stuff and that becomes their feed, is the reminder of like a new episode is there or whatever.
But if I can do a little bit of a devil's advocate.
Sure.
You know, we went through this the past few months with Patreon. Patreon upped their minimum pledges to $1.
Correct.
So that means that you're saying there is no 10 cent option.
Correct. That's why I said if, in an alternate reality. But
you can – no. You can cap it, right?
Well, you can cap it, but you can't. It's a wonky thing, and it's not how Patreon wants anybody to do it.
So Brian and I had a conversation the other night about the decision matrix, when you have to make decisions on, you know, the number of decisions that you can complicate something with adds resistance to it. And if you have to go on there and you have to remember, okay, well, I'm going to pledge $1, but I have to cap it at this because it's they do it so often.
Right.
You're adding one more decision to it, and I'm just wondering if that was.
Yeah. All right. I would say daily. Yeah. Daily. I can see the reasoning, but aside from that, if you are doing something weekly, I have known, I can count 5 Patreons that I know that have shifted from monthly to weekly, and I cannot count any that have shifted from weekly to monthly in this Patreon era that we are in. Like that is just the better way to do it if you are doing it regularly weekly.
We actually started doing the per creation as an incentive to get regular, but now that we've gone to, you know, we have a goal this year of 50 episodes period, you know, on a weekly basis. That it's kind of made it to where we're going to stay with the per creation on the same basis that you're talking about, that it's a regular thing, but it's still the incentive is there for us to create and for us to do and for us to not back out.
Correct. And also by being per creation instead of time unit, it incentivizes you to when something special comes along, like, you know, you're going to record live or whatever, and then maybe there's an amazing concert afterwards, then you can release that as a bonus extra, you know, creation.
Patron-only content.
No.
Free content.
Like, release it as another creation. It's like we are, you know, good news, team. We have double episodes this week, and then you guys get a little bit of extra scratch that way.
Right.
You know, it was interesting kind of getting into these and asking you guys questions about, like, oh, you know, per episode, should it be weekly, should it be this, should it be that, and it's just so many of those things that you try to go do, and then you realize when you've got to communicate this to your audience, and as you guys pointed out over there, it was about that decision matrix. And I get into this all the time when I talk to, like, I've dealt with, like, publishers that are like, hey, I just sent out a link to Amazon. Like, no, we want you to send it to this page, or then people can choose which link to go to like wherever they want to buy it. I'm like, it's a speed bump, and it's almost like a wall. Like, give me a list of what those links are, and I'll tweet them out individually over the course of a day. Like, hey, if you like Amazon, go buy it here, whatever. But, like, when you're telling me I got to send some people to a place to make another decision, then to make a decision, you know, we know from we all know here, like, you lose people. You're not going to get that input here. And so I've had to, like, with this, like, with as I was getting feedback when we first launched this, because I had somebody says, hey, I want to support this, but I'm afraid, what happens if you guys decide to create 50 creations? And I'm like, I need to put into the Q&A, hey, you can just have a limit on the monthly contributions. So if we have a bunch of Red Bull and decide to make a bunch of episodes, we're not going to bankrupt you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, number one, it's not going to happen. Number two, set a limit.
Yeah. I'll tell you why I'm excited about this project, because everything else I've ever done is, I have a book coming out, right? I have Blackfall coming out, which comes out in just a little over a week, right? You go promote a book, you tell your audience about the book. I can only do so much talking about that book before everybody's like, shut up about the book. And people who have the book are like, yes, it's great, I got it, I did it, what have you. With podcasts and being able to promote something on a continuous basis, every week it's a new episode. I can say, hey, we got Blake Voigt on our show who's talking about his adventures on America's Got Talent. He did really well on that show. And then we can talk about, we've got Simon Coronel, who's performing around the world in Macau. What's it like to perform for an audience that speaks several different languages? Or what's this? And I love the idea of having one thing I can continuously promote because there's a new angle every week.
Yeah.
Which is kind of new, and to build an audience for something slowly. Publishing is frustrating because it's like, oh, you need to have your audience like in the first couple weeks, and we'll decide if you're a failure or not. Although in the indie world, that's different. Side note, there may be an audiobook version coming out of a certain science fiction novel series I did.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm.
I may have just been sent, which narrator would you like to do this? Station Breaker Norpool. So.
Oh, that's great. Great, great. Yeah. Because, you know, I don't know how to read.
Oh, we know. Well, no, Brian, you willfully forgot how to read.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You're like, I got to wean myself off of text because audio's the way to go. I'm not going to pretend I don't know what those letters mean.
Man, I'll tell you what.
Look at my report card.
Joke,
I can't read. by choice.
You joke, but I would not be shocked if that's, you know, a chapter in some Michael Lewis biography or book or something about like he is such a great leader that he has willfully forgotten how to read in favor of audio that he can constantly stream into his head.
So what else? Any other questions?
Andrew may write in with more questions as things go on. certainly it's that how frequently, like, I know, like, Weird Things is probably it's the thing we do for fun and we like to do it, but it's the one we spend the least amount of attention trying to market or try to promote like other stuff. And it's probably because it's a tragedy of the commons, because it's, you know, little yours, little Justin, little mine, and then we have a lot of fun doing it, but we don't do anywhere near as much as we should to do that. And that's the thing, is like how to be mindful of that, which applies to Weird Things too. Like, what more should I be doing on Weird Things?
Yeah. Too. Well, I mean, the biggest thing is like, you know, going, making things regular, I think, was a huge boon to it. Adding the journey quest on the having a process now that makes it easy for us to do content creation where we're not flailing and going wildly different directions. And instead it's like, hey, here's a 20-minute segment we will always be able to do without having to write stuff in advance. Mm-hmm. I think was a really smart play as well.
Well, and also it's like, you know, now we've kind of built in with like the whole show kind of has a bit of a process if unspoken, you know, it's like serious story, silly story, journey quest, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's generally the way everything goes. So, and then obviously we can, if we all saw a movie or something that we're really, really excited about or something just blocks out the sun and we do, you know, dedicate the whole episode to that, then that happens periodically. But, you know, I think, having, you know, the real delicate balance that has to come in when you do, especially if you're doing multiple weekly things, is you need to figure out where you can eliminate unnecessary decisions.
And yes, both for you and for the audience. Like, that's, yes, you know, that's
absolutely
one of the biggest jumps we got on patronage was when we pointed out, like, hey, no more you on Night Attack, you get one personal RSS feed, like Patreon adding that special RSS feed so that you get everything in one 3-hour massive rock block, the pre-show, the post-show, and the show in between. All of a sudden, a lot of people up their pledges, which were at a quarter or whatever, up to $1 so that they could get that.
Very cool. Yeah, that's a our goal was with we do Magic Club, we do the straight up podcast, and then if you really then was using that, the secret session was, hey, want to learn more, you want to get in depth, that's the reason you subscribe. Because otherwise, to say, hey, just subscribe to let us talk for 20 more minutes about magic when maybe we're already talking too long about it. And that was sort of the missing link for me, was how do you go a little bit more insider? Because there's stuff that we're able to do on that show that, you know, some of our guests would never do on a regular YouTube channel. They would never want to go do out there, even in, because either it might be too technical or it's a little bit too insider just to put out on a thing for everybody. You want to have some sort of wall there.
Right.
And we can argue the merits of that, what back and forth. But I know that once we've explained, like, one, people are excited. We say, yeah, it's a magic show podcast that's actually like a real show because we have segments and stuff. And then when I explain it, and we do this secret thing where it's a hidden YouTube channel or hidden feed, you know, only accessible to the people who do this, whatever, they get excited because, like, oh, I've got this thing I'd love to show. I'd love to be able to do this handling on this.
Right.
But I don't just want to put it out there and, you know, for everywhere.
Right. Well, so. And so it's there's that token of exclusivity that makes it to where there's no way, like, they can say and do all the best magic stuff and teach it without any fear of repercussions, because, you know, that line of what is and isn't appropriate to do and what is and isn't a public forum is a constantly shifting landscape.
Oh, what would you know about that?
Well, and there's that, and it's also some, like, there's stuff that I own, you know, that I created that I could decide what to do, but I'm like, no, I wouldn't put this in an open YouTube channel, because I also want the people who do it to know that, you know, it's not their chances of them going, if somebody, they go to a party, somebody's not going to be like, oh yeah, I saw this on Scam School.
Right, right.
Not that that has ever happened to anybody. And so it's like figuring out that, because part of Magic is some things really like to have exclusivity. Some things you want to know that's a smaller group of people. And it's, if you go to the Magic Castle, you will see guys sitting at a table over there showing moves, and they'll look around over their shoulders to make sure nobody else is watching, because even in a room full of magicians, they don't want other magicians knowing.
Right, right.
Have you, Andrew, and I don't know if you're concerned about this, but because there is that level of exclusivity, and I think you can do it because you're not monthly, or maybe you can only do it if you're monthly, but Patreon has an option where you, it's called pay on pledge. So the second someone pledges, they pay that amount right up front before something, before the month
yeah,
or the
yeah I think that's
triggered.
A monthly option,
okay, because I know,
and I don't,
there are
I'm
illustrators
not...
who do that because their works get, you know, they get stolen and passed around, and you know they need a way to like gate that off so that people don't like put a fake pledge in, steal everything, and then get out before the next dump happens.
Yeah, you know, Bryce, I thought a lot about that, and it was like, there certainly is, you're going to get people who are going to dip in just to get access to the archive and to go do that. But it's like, that's a happy problem to be at that point. And another option we looked at is like, I used Podbean to handle the podcast uploading and all that, because I think I looked at their tools and they're actually really, really solid. They have a video component, and that might be, at some point we might just say, we could switch over to, hey, you know, subscribe through Podbean, because Podbean actually allows you to sell subscriptions too. Hmm. Which is another way to do it. Because if we have a group of people and we have their ear and we can say, hey, if you want to go do this here, of course, we didn't want to complicate things initially. So,
I like the Podbean CMS, but I haven't tried any of their subscription stuff.
Neither have I, but I saw it was an option. Like, and you can do unlimited video for something like $30 a month. I mean, and to That's think about that, back when we all started doing video and podcasting, guys,
oh,
I think about
so expensive.
What made YouTube was amazing. Like, you can load anything you want. Like, what?
You know? What? This is crazy.
So,
hey, cool. do you guys have some picks?
I'm trying to think.
I got one. Somebody took Breaking Bad and cut it into a 2-hour movie. And the nutty thing is, it works. There's a lot of inferred storylines and some montage segments, but it's got three main acts. And if you're somebody who either wants to, even if you just, some of the edits definitely change context and change character motivation, but oh, it's already been pulled.
I like the Vimeo shrug.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I'm sure you can find it somewhere at some point. But I don't mean you right now, Bryce. I mean, my guess is it's not wiped from history, but sure. It was interesting.
If we find it, check out the show notes.
Yeah. It was interesting because it basically took three core storylines and it showed all the best scenes with it and it cut it together. It worked. And that was one of the things I asked everyone to do, is watch it if you were somebody who had never seen the movie or the TV show before. And a number of people said, I'm really glad I did that. Now I know what everyone's talking about.
I'm guessing there's a lot fewer scenes of Walter Jr. eating breakfast.
I am going to pick, I don't know, Better Call Saul is coming back. I saw a physical Los Pollos Hermanos this weekend. I was very delighted by that.
Yeah, did you guys go by there yet?
Yeah, they were already starting to deconstruct it by the time the lines got down and far enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. And it was just straight up, they were selling chicken? That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been to the place in Albuquerque that...
It's permanent, right?
Yeah. It's got the Los Pollos Hermanos sign and all of that stuff, but it's actually a burger joint on the inside.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, everything's laid out. It's like, here's Walter's booth. You can sit where he ate and all this other stuff. It's actually really cool.
That's like the original McDonald's, like some other restaurant chain or whatever has it, but they have like McDonald's Museum. You know, it's sort of this weird kind of history to that. And then in L.A. here we have the there's the McDonald's used in all the commercials, which is like in a city of industry, which I've never been by there. I want to go check that out because it's like, it's a McDonald's behind this fence because it's like the perfect McDonald's. My pick is, if you have any interest in working in coding or doing things like that, and I've been working on this, that whole social media project I mentioned before, I use an environment. I use what's basically – it's a cloud-based editor. It's called an IDE, like what it is. So it allows me to create my code, talk to the server and whatever, and have a test server and do that, save it, and then when I'm ready to deploy it to another system called Heroku. I've been using Cloud9. Cloud9 actually got purchased by Amazon, and I've been very, very happy with it because it's very – I start a project, I'll abandon it, and I go back into it. Everything's there. Everything's ready. You know, it's cost. There's a free level, and then it's not that much per month to do that. It's been a very super easy way to do that. I'm not storing a bunch of files locally on my computer and not worried about that. Everything is served there. It's just a great way to develop and push things through and test stuff, and you can let other people go to their websites you're working on. It's a little nerdy technical, but there are a lot of tutorials. If you try like Team Treehouse or some of the other ones, or maybe it was like 1 month Rails and stuff, this is one of the ones that they say, hey, check this out. So if you're getting into coding and you're looking for a way to sort of keep it all kind of organized in what you're doing, Cloud9, been very happy with it.
Awesome.
And another plug too is like Shopify, by the way. I'm going to say like, I'm going to double down. I pick Shopify. If you want to do web commerce, like, man, Shopify has been adding great tools and stuff. Like they've been doing some really great tools for tracking. I'm looking at seeing like where orders are coming from, Facebook, wherever. They've just made that product better and better. Like you get that bill, that $80 a month bill with the level, whatever I'm at, and you're like, eh, but then I look at, man, like their built-in system for sending things out and mailing stuff is great at certain levels. Other times you're better off using stamps.com, but Shopify is a shopping cart service. I said, you know what? It's been friction free. I haven't had any complaints.
Ritual of Misery. You guys got,
have you heard of Poppy?
Oh my God.
Wait. Oh.
Hi, I'm Poppy.
No.
I just shot you a link to a miniature playlist, on our channel.
Poppy Cat.
It's completely ridiculous. And, I got a playlist of a series of videos. It's two smaller of her videos, which this one's actually 10 minutes of her just saying the same thing. So, and then a kids react, and then she reacts, and then the kids react to her reacting to them. And it is the best 20 minutes that I can find on the internet right now. I've watched it like four times.
Or the worst.
It's completely ridiculous,
yeah,
and it's funny.
It's pretty bad.
And shout out to DJM for giving this to us on our last podcast, and it's infected my brain since.
Reacts to kids react to Poppy, right on.
The best thing I've seen on YouTube lately is Dorkly. It's a channel called Dorkly, and these guys put together these short 2 to 3 minute comedy clips that are in the style of 16-bit video games,
yeah.
And they're hilarious. And like I said, they're only like 2 to 3 minutes. So you can devour a few of them in a session, and they're pretty good.
Right on.
Sweet. Guys, it's been great having you on here. It's been super helpful. Andrew M. is very, very grateful that you're able to help him out. And, you know, he's just starting out. He's got to clear the smoke and fog from his eyes and, you know, see his way out to there. So, he'll get an update, and hopefully he'll reach just 100 subscribers on the YouTube channel, and then he can get a name for it. Although XQRT101-888888. Kind of catchy now.
It's got a rhythm.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.